Hello, everybody. Hello, Tucson. Hello, world. I'm not saying hello to Oprah today because you know she's not here in Tucson because it's too hot. So, Oprah, I'm not saying hello to you. This is News Talk 790 KNST. I am indeed Mrs. Green, and I am beyond Thunderdome excited about the show this week. We are changing the format because we have one of my heroes, and I mean that, and I know he's listening, Mike Reynolds, the garbage warrior, internationally known and admired architect who created the first Earthship outside of Taos, New Mexico. I've seen the documentary about him. I've read as much as I can. I've gone down the rabbit hole on his website because it's so content rich. So we are going to bring Mike right on, and I am going to do my firing away of questions because I've got them right here. And before I do that, let me just thank my sponsors, because without them, I wouldn't be interviewing Mike Reynolds. The Chapman Automotive team, thanks guys, and the Fairfax companies. I had lunch with Jason Tankersley, the CEO, this week, and his wonderful assistant, Teresa, and you will be hearing more great news about what they are up to here in Tucson on Mrs. Green very soon. They take landscape waste. They take post-construction waste. They're packaging it. They're going to sell it as green waste to TEP, and how awesome is that? They're the ultimate recyclers, and Jason Tankersley is just an awesome human being doing everything he can to help make the planet. So thank you, Fairfax, and take your landscaping waste to Fairfax. Use the locals. Thanks, and let's go. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
I know. I'm like a little kid, and I never get nervous about my show, but I'm serious. For 1 year, I've been watching you. So tell me, let's start telling people what an Earthship is. One of the things that amazes me is that you were 35 years ahead of your time. Is that fair?
Well, yeah, things were pretty much not taken seriously 35 years ago, the things that we're doing. And we didn't consciously know what we were doing, if you want the truth. We were just responding to the issues presented to us on the planet through the media, really. And so what we found ourselves doing after that constant response for about 30 years was making a building that is absolutely appropriate for today's world, which is we call an Earthship. It's a carbon zero building. It's got $100 per year or less total annual utility bill, and that answers a lot of questions right there. It's a sustainable building that makes its own electricity, harvests its own water, contains and treats its own sewage, heats and cools itself, produces a significant amount of food, and is made with about 40-45% recycled materials.
And what is the core building material?
The core building material at this point is automobile tires, which we have as many of on this planet as we have trees. And they're rammed with earth. Of course, earth is indigenous everywhere, so are automobile tires, for that matter. They're indigenous to the entire planet. So it's a building material that you can gather and use without remanufacture anywhere on the planet. It's low-tech. It's earthquake-resistant. It creates a very structurally sound wall that is also a volume of thermal mass. And thermal mass is what stores temperature to keep a building stable in terms of temperature.
Okay. And you use the term biotech. And is that just things of the earth? Can you explain a little bit about what that means? And
I've done a lot of lecturing at architectural schools and things, and they always ask me, what courses would you recommend for the future? And seeing what I have seen of architecture in the last few decades, I say that we should teach physics and biology. And if we can teach people physics and biology, they can figure out from there, they can deduct how to live on this planet if they really understand the physics and the biology of this planet. So I coined the word biotech really out of I just started not really wanting to use the word architect, because current architecture is making 66 million dollar buildings that cost $18,000 a month to operate, like certain museums and art centers in even in your state,
right.
Our state, everywhere.
I know.
And so that's like a crime to me. And if that's what architects do, I can't really play that game.
Right. Okay. Now, what amazes me also, you started out in Taos or near Taos. And I read an article on your website about one of the women, I think her name was Annie Remke, who started, she did the first Earthship east of the Mississippi in Ohio. So what type of adaptations do you have to do for an Earthship that's in the hot, hot desert of Phoenix, Arizona versus something in Ohio?
Well, the concepts are, the example I make is it's very much like an automobile. An automobile gasoline engine, you put it in a Porsche, and it goes 120 miles an hour down the highway.
Right.
The same concept of an engine goes into a Toyota four-wheel drive truck with different gearing and different running gear and wheel setups, and it goes 45 degrees up a mountain slope full of sand or something. So the concept is tuned to a different use. That's really all there is. It's the biology and the physics, and those phenomena that we find in biology and physics are tuned different for Ohio than they are for the hot, arid areas.
Right,
so
right.
We've taken it all over the world, and in fact, that's how we have learned to tune it, is going from 14,000 feet in Bolivia to a desert or to a real hot climate.
You know, one of my favorite books of all time is a book called The Tipping Point, and it talks about how cultures or even a disease gets to the tipping point where it really reaches more of a critical mass. And 35 years ago, I mean, I admire the battle you took. I think, was it 15 years that you went before the New Mexico State Legislature to have them pass a bill to allow experimental building? Was it 15 years?
Well, it was 10 years of battle leading up to it, and then it took 3 or 4 years to actually engage in introducing and passing the law. So there was about 14 years of battle. I would just call it war. And I say pretty often that 75% of all my time, all my money, and all my energy has gone to fighting to be able to do this, and only 25% of time, energy, and money has gone to doing it. And if that were the other way around, we'd be a lot further.
We'd have a lot more Earthships. But it seems to me like from looking at what you're doing, you really are global. You're in Africa. You're in New Zealand. You're in South America. So at some point, things had to shift, though, Mike, for you to reach more of a tipping point. The word got out about you. I remember, I think it was either in the Garbage Warrior or on the news, after the tsunami hit, wasn't your firm one of the first response teams to get on the ground there?
We have a pretty thorough website that explains what we do and why. And apparently, and I think people search the web for solutions, and our solutions, I think one of the reasons we come up so often is we're addressing a lot of issues all at once. We're addressing water, energy, heating and cooling, food, recycling, sewage. We're addressing, half a dozen of the major problems that every city and every country has. And it's just by chance. We simply were responding to the media saying, here's a problem and here's a problem. And so we kept building an approach to a solution to those problems into what we were doing. And it became global simply because those problems are global.
And boy, what a role the internet plays. I can't believe it. I mean, seriously, in terms of global awareness. Mike, we have to go to a short break because the FCA makes us, or FCC. So we'll be right back. I have lots more questions. So if you'll just stay on the line, I'm sure there'll be questions from listeners. You're listening to Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream. We're interviewing Mike Reynolds, which I will now call a biotech, creator of the first Earthship. and world-renowned for what he's doing, and I'm excited. Stay tuned.
The children outside all are laughing under perfect sky.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST, where we prove every single week that not only is living green fun, but it's interesting because we get to interview great guests. We have one today, Mike Reynolds, known as the garbage warrior in some circles, and world-renowned, in demand, and making a huge difference on the planet. So welcome back, Mike. You know, your Earth ships, they're made out of tires. I know a lot of that, but they don't look like it. So what do you put on the outside?
Well, if you consider tires to be just another building material. In other words, if you make a building out of concrete block
right,
in Phoenix
right.
or something, you plaster it.
Okay.
Same goes for tires. They get plastered inside and out. In many cases, we bury the outside for thermal reasons, and it's just a softer look on the planet to have something buried. So they're finished just like any other building material. They are just another building material.
But how do you do something? I mean, how do you create a building that maintains an inside temperature of about 70 degrees, whether it's 9 degrees below zero or 110? Is it simply the structure and the insulation and the windows? I mean, that's an incredible accomplishment. So how do you keep that when it's, you know, like
well,
I said?
It's every one of those. It's like there is a phenomena of thermal mass that few people really, really have a grip on, an understanding of, but it's like...
And I don't. You can be sure of that. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, mass is dense. Dense matter is a conduit for temperature. It's almost like a chunk of dense matter is to temperature, a barrel is to water.
Okay.
A barrel holds water. Dense mass holds temperature. So we know that, so we isolate that dense mass by insulating it and burying it on the outside and exposing it to the room side. And then there's one other issue of physics, which is why I say people should study physics, is that temperature moves automatically from the warmer place to the colder place.
Okay.
And if the wall ends up storing the temperature, and then when the room temperature drops down at night, it leaks out of the wall back into the room. When the room temperature is cold enough, it just actually works like a thermostat, and it pulls the temperature out of the wall, or the wall just leaks into the room in terms of temperature. So you basically are playing with that phenomena. We have now the Earth ships have a 7-foot thick wall insulated on the outside and exposed to the room on the inside. So it's that phenomena. It's also super insulation in the roof. It's also thermal windows. And we have a new concept that we've been playing with for the last few years that's taken us all the way to the top, and that is called internal space. We double and even triple greenhouse a building so that the space that the people live in doesn't even know what's going on outside. The greenhouses become buffer zones that are great for treating sewage and growing food and making more roof space to collect more water. Plus, you can hang out in them some. But really, they are buffer zones to internalize the actual living spaces that, like I say, just end up not knowing what's going on outside, and they stay stable.
Right. And I know this is a little bit off the subject, but I'll bring it right back. I was at a presentation at the University of Arizona for this solar pod that they're building to bring back to Washington, D.C., and my friend Chuck took me and showed me the water reclamation they're doing, and he just talked about the amount of water that they could reclaim that comes off of the condensation from the air conditioning units at the university. It was a phenomenal off-the-charts number. So when you design an Earthship, there's none of the air conditioning water dripping off. It's no waste. It's all going into reclaimed water and being used for other things. Is that fair to say?
Yes, there's no, like, that's why we really hit biology and physics so much is because we're doing this mainly with no moving parts, with no technology. I mean, I have nothing against technology. It's just the proper blend that is necessary. But there's moving parts, and we don't have equipment that that has condensation. We do have condensation on the windows that we recollect and put in the planters. We take condensation as a phenomena, just like all the rest of them.
Right, right. Nothing is wasted. And, you know, looking at a lot of the models on the home, like I said, I really felt like Alice in Wonderland down the rabbit hole. I wanted to go to the next page. Content-rich website is an understatement. When you do something like some of the woodwork, beautiful doors and beautiful metalwork, are those reclaimed materials also, or do you have to actually buy some wood?
Often they are, but we do buy some wood, but it's very minimized. And what we're seeing constantly is that once you get into that realm in your mind of looking at all of the things that are thrown away as resources, as a person would look at a forest in terms of timber, we look at a dump. And one of the things we started doing recently is I am sure anybody that's ever been to a dump, they separate things now, and there's a mountain in every dump. There's a mountain of ranges, refrigerators, washing machines, and stoves. And those porcelain panels, those baked-on enamel panels, are great roofing. So we just went the other day to the dump and harvested panels off of the washing machines. And they, you know, you get a 2x2 baked-on enamel panel, and it's a roofing shingle.
Oh my gosh!
And so there's just more all the time. We're just finding more and more materials that are really good materials, and it is absurd to even be throwing them away.
So I mean, I talk a lot about global garbage on the planet because you're right. I just woke up. I wasn't awake 45 years ago. I woke up about a year and a half ago, which is why I started the show and realized we are really running out of time here. We're using it up faster than we can use it up. But what kind of sacrifices, since I am really Mrs. Mainstream going green, what kind of not sacrifices, I don't want to use that word, but changes would someone like me who has a big, huge closet that I now feel like kind of oof about, what kind of changes do you have to make to live in an earth ship in terms of lifestyle changes?
That's been kind of one of the battles. In the old days, 15, 20, 25 years ago, you had to make a lot of changes. I mean, very few people wanted to do it. It was like taking a sailboat ride across the Atlantic. I mean,
right. You
had to constantly be putting up sails and taking sails down and bailing, and you had to do a lot of things to operate this ship, if you will. And so we realized that if this is ever going to catch on and ever going to make an impression or a statement, it's got to be user-friendly. It's got to be just as easy to operate as a regular home.
Right.
And we have arrived at that. So your answer to your question now is there's actually less to do in an earthship than there is in a regular home, and there are actually less sacrifices. The biggest sacrifice you have in an earthship today is you are sacrificing the monthly utility bills
that you pay.
That's really it.
It's unbelievable. And the homes are beautiful. And I think that, for example, is every bathroom, is all the hot water solar? Does that go without saying?
Well, it depends on your climate. In Mexico and Arizona, pretty much 90% of the hot water is solar. But in another climate, we had been for a long time using gas demand backup heaters that they use in Europe. They've been using them for decades there.
Okay.
And they are a minimum amount of gas just to tune up the water after it goes through the solar hot water heater on a cloudy day, let's say. But now we've started making those units operated by biodiesel.
Oh,
and
you're kidding.
So we're down to very minimal backup fuel for a backup hot water heater. And so solar hot water is now, we're working on wind-resistant hot water. Just fine-tuning at this point. You get it down really far, and then you see, I can get it to nothing. I can get it to nothing.
Or are they just on big acres, or are they in the middle of urban areas? I mean, I want to talk when we come back about what you have going on in Tucson and Phoenix and how that's panned out. But in terms of, I know in Taos, when I first read about it, I mean, there's a community there, and I would assume of like-minded people that want to make a difference and want to live a sustainable life.
The most active one is called Greater World, 640 acres, 130 homes. So you do the math there, and you see that there's a 340 acres really of green belt, so to speak,
right.
This common land that is not to be built upon. And so there is a community, and communities are a good way to go. That was one of the battles we had, though. We had to turn that community into a legal subdivision. Subdivisions are all about utilities, and we didn't have utilities. And that's the classic situation right there. We had to meet criteria that didn't even apply to us. And that's what's going on with really all over the world with alternative solutions. The criteria that exist, the rules, the regulations that exist, do not even apply to the solutions. And that's got everybody in a quandary. And it's basically holding up the whole show.
Right. Okay. Well, we're going to go to another quick break. And I so want a two-hour show because I have about four more pages of questions. But if you'll have the next segment, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST. And we're interviewing Mike Reynolds, who is the Garbage Warrior. Check out his website, earthship.net, and call in with your questions. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST, where we are interviewing a visionary, a true visionary for the world. And I'm going out of my normal context for the show because there's so many things I want to talk about. But I do want to get the tip in because it's about your health. And there were so many articles that I got this week because it's summer. Just wear natural sunscreens. That's all I'm going to tell you. I'll beg you. Go to the Daily Greens website and read why. There's toxins in sunscreens. There are great natural alternatives out there, including some essential oils and other things that don't have any of the toxins that go through your body. So I have to give that tip out, and we'll go right to Mike. Mike, I'm crazy about things that people put on their skin. It's like we have no idea of the cancer-forming agents that are in things that are supposed to protect us. I'm sure you do, but it's like it's. I got to get that tip in. Okay, so I'd love to know more about Tucson and Phoenix, if there's anything here. I know there's something in Phoenix. Does a family actually live in that house that you can rent, or is that like a demo, or it says you can...
Strangely enough, here in New Mexico, we have our major demonstration building is called the Phoenix.
Oh, my gosh.
My son called it the Phoenix because I went out and started pounding tires into the ground to build it when I had lost everything. And so it was he called it the Phoenix because it was rising from the ashes.
Rising
from
done. Literally.
And literally, yeah. And it's turned out to be... it's a home that produces, it will take care of a family of four in terms of food as well as everything else. And it is being visited now by, say, 15 students at a time from the Bartlett School of Architecture in London. And it's full all the time. They just shot a trailer for a new movie, a new age movie there. And so it is truly a Phoenix situation, but it is our best example of taking this to the extreme.
Right.
So that gets confused sometimes with a project that we did in Phoenix, Arizona, which was a similar situation. A guy had been working on this thing. It's a big earthship, and it's tuned up for the hot, arid climate. It cools itself. It's got its own power system. It does everything. Treats and contains its sewage, but it's like 85% finished, and he finally went bankrupt. He just risked everything to build it. It's a huge home, and he worked on it.
It's gorgeous.
Very intelligent guy. He worked on it for, I don't know, 5 or 6 or more years, and at the very end, he couldn't get. He tried to do it out in the desert without a permit. Now he is trying to get a permit. And he just couldn't go that extra expense and effort that it took to get the permit. Oh. So he lost it. He lost 6 years of work to investors that had backed him in banking. Oh. And so he fought for 6 years, lost, and now the building is owned by bankers, and they're wanting us to go there and finish it. And what we're talking about doing is going to see the mayor and the governor in Arizona and the mayor of Phoenix and presenting our new law in New Mexico that'll just open up the doors to finish this building.
Oh my gosh.
A test site. Call this building a test site. They have racetracks to test automobiles on so that they can improve them. You know, they can vastly improve automobiles because they have test sites to test them out. We don't have that for housing. And we're trying to say, let this building and many others, many other places around the planet, let's have test sites with people living in experimental buildings so that we can learn. And that's what we're trying to do with that building. But he is a person, one of thousands probably, that have been destroyed by the codes and the regulations. They actually inhibit the evolution of green building.
So there's no irony here. We can build buildings that suck tons of energy off the grid. We can build cars that produce toxic emissions. But to build an energy-efficient home that he wanted to live in that would hurt no one, it shut him down. He's bankrupt. It makes me sick. I mean, my daughter has an expression. She says vom.com. Well, this makes me want to go to vom.com. And it gets me so irate. But you have a thing that you talk about a lot, and it's about failure. And I'd like you to talk about that a little bit, because people call into my show and they want to start their own businesses, and I'm an entrepreneur, and I know it can be really tough. So talk about your philosophy on failing.
Well, having failed, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times, there was nobody I could go to learn all of these things. I had to do trial and error. And I had the credential of an architect, and I failed as an architect. As an architect, when you fail, you get in a lot of trouble because you have a credential that demands no failure. And so the process of failing is where I learned the most. You know, when I would fail at something seven times and on the eighth time get it right, the body of knowledge that I had from those seven failures far exceeds the body of knowledge I would get from one success right off the bat.
Right.
It's such a depth of understanding that you get from failing. Our society does not allow failure. Failure causes lawsuits. Failure causes loss in every kind of way, of reputation, of credential. And so failure is a no-no. And what I'm saying is, please, let's allow failure let's make forums for failure so that we can learn. We have to learn a lot in a short period of time if we're even going to be here much longer.
I have to keep my presence about me, but the Earth ship that you did, I think it's the Nautilus, things like that. I mean, that's based on nature. And when you talk about failure, to follow up on that thought, we have just a cookie cutter approach as a culture to define success in school, which we're obviously not doing great in that regard in many ways either. So finding inspiration to say, if I fail today, that's a good thing. Basically, that's what you're saying, because you learned. As long as you learned, you're learning in the process.
Yeah, it's like we almost have laws against failure. And I'm trying to encourage it to be the other way around. Do not be afraid to fail. You know, the tennis shoe companies, Nike or whatever, they have commercials, just do it. They ought to really not only encourage people to just do it, but encourage people to risk it all for something you believe in and not be afraid to fail, because failure, something will be learned from that the world can use.
Right. Okay. Now, I would love to know I have people on the show from solar, people on the show from alternative fuels, people on the show from wind power. What's your read on those as alternative sources of energy for the next iteration of what we're not going to run out of and what isn't going to produce a lot of toxic waste?
Well, first of all, any alternative to oil and nuclear
is better.
Is positive step for me. I agree with any attempts in those directions. I only use wind if there's not enough sun. I don't use wind when there's plenty of sun, because sun doesn't require moving parts.
Right.
I'm not that fond of wind farms, because if you look at them, they're usually only half spinning because there's the rest of them are needing maintenance. There's a lot of maintenance in wind. I mean, the place where there's always battles when anybody wants to put a wind farm near you because it has an impact. The best wind farm I ever saw, and I was impressed with it, was out in the bay. I believe it's the bay out in front of Copenhagen. They had the wind farm out in the sea, and that was beautiful. It's because nobody lives out there, and the noise and the effect wasn't as much. But still, wind is better than nuclear and coal and all of that. But sun and wind together, we just sort of try. We look at the area
right.
And pick up what we can. I think another thing I'm very fond of, let's say, is decentralized everything. In other words, rather than having a giant wind farm with a giant impact, I would rather see 100 houses with small, low-impact windmills.
Right.
So, and because the infrastructure is starting to take over the world. The Hopi Indians, when I first came to New Mexico, the Hopi Indian legend had it that the world, the earth, would be taken over by a spider web, a giant spider web. And I didn't know what they meant, but now I do. When I go back to cities, I look up in the sky and I see a spider web of wires.
Right.
And beneath the ground, there's a spider web of pipes. And so the infrastructure needed to deal with the amount of people on the planet is archaic at this point. And decentralized each unit singularly, making everything for itself is much more.
Go to about 12:57, and if you can stay on the line a little bit, I know you're taking time out of your Saturday, but I'd love to ask you more when we come back about the projects you have going on in places like Africa and India and how that came to pass and what they're asking of you. Because we are global, it's a global economy and putting one together. And I think you give me and our listeners such a message of hope. And in this crazy world where we are just burning it up, it's great to have hope and someone like you who's made it happen, and you're walking it. You're not just talking it. So can you stay on for about 8 more minutes?
Sure.
Okay, Mike, thanks. We'll be right back. We're going to break. This is News Talk 790 KNST. I'm Mrs. Green. Stay tuned.
We got 3 R's we're going to talk about today. We gotta learn to reduce, reuse, recycle.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST. Our guest today is Mike Reynolds, the garbage warrior. We've had a wonderful, interesting show. And before we go back to you, Mike, for our last topic, I want to give a shout out to my friends Jane and Ron. They're here from Santa Fe, enduring the heat. And the reason I'm doing this shout out is because they were my very first sponsor, and they said yes when I had about 3 listeners, I think. So thanks for saying yes to me, and look at the green monster you've helped to create, you guys. And the other thing is I visited Tohono O'odham Park this week as Mrs. Green to do a focus group, and email me if you want to know everything about Tohono O'odham Park. It's a jewel in the desert. They're doing water harvesting. They have a reclaimed art exhibit that is just first class. It's a juried show, I'm sure, and they are using recycled materials to make unbelievably beautiful art. So Tohono O'odham Park, Ina and Oracle, most people never heard of it and they don't know where it is, and I want to promote it every time I'm on this show. Okay, Mike, I'm very interested in the global picture, and I'd love to know, in the time we have left, what you're doing in places like Africa and India where there's abject poverty, drought, starvation, I mean, you name it. It's. I think I've got problems when I'm in a traffic jam and it's hot. It's like anything is diminished by what's going on the global scale. So what are you doing over there?
Well, there's that is basically the best place to apply what we've learned.
Truly.
Is because there's just crisis over there in Africa constantly due to war and HIV. And the people it affects the most are the children. So there's a tremendous amount of orphans that need, shelter and school. And so we're talking to probably 10 or so different groups that are trying to do schools and orphanages and housing for these kids over there. And so we're being approached on a dozen different levels to take what we know over there, because what they need is shelter, water, education, sanitation, and, of course, food. And those are all the things that we deal with. And, of course, they need electricity to run all of this. So it is the perfect forum for us to take what we have learned. And we also, it's gonna cause us to hone our skills, because taking it there, it's going to have to be much more simple, more affordable and available. And by going there and stretching our minds to do that, we will then bring that back to the United States, because they are starting to need it just as bad now.
Right, right.
So the African situation it could be the future. I'll tell you something about a place like Africa. They don't have they have very little, if any, codes and rules and regulations, and they therefore do not have the barriers between them and a solution that the developed world does. So, given the right circumstance, this virus that we have created would grow much faster in Africa than it would in a developed country.
Right, right, right. And what about, I mean, are you doing anything now in India? I mean, just the population
India,
there.
We're talking in India right now. We don't have a project going in India since the tsunami. They basically wanted us back almost immediately, but it's the same old thing of funding. I funded that first India project myself, and of course I'm still paying it back, but I can't keep funding them. So what we're looking at right now is funding for a dozen different really important projects that would apply all of this and put it into a situation that would just launch a whole new realm of hope for millions of children.
And what about, like, with the building of it in Africa, for example? I know in India there are plenty of tires, but something as simple as tires. Are there still an unlimited amount of tires available in Africa?
Well, tires are indigenous, really, to the entire planet.
Yes.
Everywhere there's a city, there's automobiles, and everywhere there's automobiles, there's tires. But the thing of us working with tires and aluminum cans and plastic bottles and glass bottles has taught us that we don't have to be using any one particular material.
Right.
We take the concepts, go look around at what is available in that area, and use it. So we're not locked into any cookie cutter situation. We're following concepts and applying them with whatever is available.
Right, right. And you, I really love to, when I interview someone like you, do you have like a Kodak moment or one of the proudest moments that you have in your, you have really fought a lot of battles. Garbage Warrior is a great name for you because you're fighting the good fight, and that's clear. Do you have a one of those, yeah, Gina, I really want to tell you this?
Well, it's pretty much happens daily. So if that's the case, then I can't wait to get up every morning, because every day there is something new, some new opportunity, some new window opening. And so it's just like every single moment at this point is filled with, the hope of taking this further.
Yeah, I feel the same way about being Mrs. Green. Sleep annoys me. Why do I have to sleep? There's so much I want to do and so many people I want to interview and so many good words I want to share. Now, what about, I'm very interested, you've mentioned it quite a bit, and if I got off air and I didn't talk to you about it, I'd be saying, why didn't I ask about that? What do you mean when you say food, that you grow food in the house? Is that what you mean?
Yes, like that one project that we call the Phoenix has half of the square footage of floor area is food production. And it's my opinion that, up until now, it's been common that people make houses for themselves and they have a little house plant, a token house plant here or there. In the future, when food is much more hard to come by, people are going to be making houses for plants, and maybe they'll have a hammock in the garden somewhere where they can sleep. Because plants, we can't live without food. And so we're developing triple layer tiers of growing food and all kinds of technique to produce food fast. We become farmers in our homes. And the home first has to be set up so that it can be a tropical climate year-round to produce food. I mean, we actually had got in a battle with somebody in our community who wanted to do a typical greenhouse to produce food, which is a valid thing, but it was a typical greenhouse that didn't heat itself, and they wanted to heat it with a big furnace.
Oh my
and
gosh.
That's what greenhouses do. They make a tropical climate with nuclear fuel to grow food, where you can apply these principles of physics and biology, and you can have a greenhouse that doesn't take a drop of fuel, stays tropical year-round, produces food year-round.
Right. And the woman, Annie, what caught my attention is I'm a big avocado lover, and I know now about what comes into my house, and I'm very judicious about it. My husband is, actually, about the toxins on the food and how many times a head of lettuce has been sprayed. So not only, it's such a ripple effect. If I'm growing a tomato and I go and pick it, I know where it's been and I know what I put on it. So it's
definitely an important issue, because the quality of food is grown for money and speed. And so the quality of food has suffered. But there's another issue that is being talked about all over the world, and that's the carbon footprint of food. If you get bananas from South America, the carbon footprint on that banana that banana makes is vastly different than the banana that I grow here in Taos, New Mexico at 7,000 feet in an airship.
Oh my
gosh. To ship food is because shipping food and building materials starts your whole life with a giant carbon footprint just to begin with. And if you can produce food locally in your own home, you have vastly reduced your carbon footprint.
It just takes my breath away, and you're right. And there's so many, the reduce your carbon footprint, help you live a longer life. Can you really grow a banana almost anywhere if you have the right conditions? I mean, that blows me away.
Well, we have them at 9,000 feet in New Mexico. We have people signing our guest books in our nightly rental buildings, saying they got up this morning and made banana pancakes in February, and there was a foot of snow outside.
Oh my gosh.
We're talking grapes and melons and strawberries. We had 18 artichokes on one plant just recently. We're just producing food right and left now, and getting better and better at it. And the Phoenix has a tilapia pond in it. You can go fishing in the living room of the Phoenix.
Oh, my gosh. Mike, how can people help? Do you have a foundation? Is it something you're thinking about? Because it's a global solution.
With news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks.
From the Breakmaster Studios,
this is News Talk 790 KNST Tucson.